Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Today we are going to continue our exploration of Jupiter's upcoming entrance into Gemini. And we are going to look at it today from the standpoint of the soul. If you believe, as ancient astrologers did, that the soul is moving from lifetime to lifetime, learning, growing, evolving as it journeys from one incarnation to the next, this was a prevalent belief among the ancient mystics who practiced astrology, then it stands to reason that the planets moving through the signs may all act as teachers for the evolving soul. In which case, we might ask the question, what are the kinds of spiritual lessons that we may learn as Jupiter's in Gemini or as Pluto's in Aquarius or anything like that? And you know that this is, if you watch my channel regularly, this is something we like to do from time to time. We look at the archetypal nature of the planet, just what kinds of themes are going to be present, but then also, you know, what are the underlying lessons that we might be learning from any given placement, because there's always a lot. So anyhow, that's what we'll do today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections as we go along. And you can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. Two promotions today before we get into our talk. I am very excited for my next monthly webinar, which is coming up on May 16th. So you have just about another week to register. On May 16th, I'm going to be doing a talk called Neptune in Aries, When the Ocean Turns Red. And this is a talk that will preview the archetypal meaning of Neptune in Aries for us both personally and collectively. And I will be showing you the charts of famous people from the past with Neptune in Aries, as well as major events that happened while Neptune was in Aries in previous eras. We're also going to be talking at length about the symbolism of Neptune in Aries and what you can expect from it as it moves into a new whole sign house in your birth chart. This talk is important because Neptune's culminating at the final degree of Pisces and turning retrograde. Next year, Neptune will move into Aries, but it is sitting like 5 minutes of 1 degree from the doorway to Aries. So we're taking this as an opportunity to look at Neptune's entrance into Aries. In June, I'll be looking at the 12th house, and in July, I'll be previewing Uranus in Gemini. So I highly recommend you check this out. You register to attend May 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. The webinar link will be sent to you. If you cannot make it live, we will send you the recording link afterward. And then the other thing that I'm promoting is my first year program. It's first year program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. The early bird sale ends on May 15th. So that's also coming up next week. You still have time to join all the way up until the start of class. Of course, you can use the need-based tuition assistance if you're someone who would like to take our upcoming first year course in Hellenistic Astrology, but you need a little help to make it happen. Check out the need-based tuition. When you apply, you select a number within a sliding scale. We match you with a payment plan around that number, and then you're set up for the course. So our sale ends coming up soon, and but for those who might need tuition assistance, that runs until the start of the program. If you stick around after today's talk, you'll hear me telling you more about the program in greater depth. There's a video that I've tagged on after the content ends. You'll see me pop back up and telling you all about the first year program. I hope that you will check it out. It is a very good time to study astrology because when you have Jupiter entering the sign of Hermes, who was the ancient founder of astrology, and making a trine to Pluto in Aquarius, it is a good time to be comprehending the vast sort of language and philosophical history of astrology and learning how to utilize it, whether it's professional or for personal growth. It's healing, and it changes your mind and your heart to study astrology in depth and in community. So check it out. All right. Now, on to our content for the day. Let's look at Jupiter's entrance into Gemini on the real-time clock once more. And here you will see that we have, here as I'm recording this, we're coming up on the entrance. And you'll see that Jupiter enters Gemini right around May 25th. So let's move this forward 2 days. There you go. Jupiter's entrance into Gemini. We have visited in several episodes this week, looking at it from the archetypal perspective and from the historical perspective, previous periods and tracking them in your life. This is a fantastic placement for Jupiter because it brings up this very interesting archetypal tension between Mercury and Zeus, or Hermes and Zeus, Jupiter, Mercury in the Roman pantheon. So we talked about that at length this week. What I want to do today is talk about five things that Jupiter in Gemini will teach us as evolving spiritual beings. Now, can I guarantee that you will learn any of these things? No. But these are the most likely things that I came up with as someone who has worked with so many people over the years and seen this placement so many times. These are the five things that I believe Jupiter in Gemini offers us as evolving souls who are learning and relearning the same lessons, really all of us are. And so this is something that it doesn't really matter where it lands in your birth chart. It doesn't matter what house it's in. It doesn't matter where your natal Jupiter is. These are things that I believe any of us may stand to learn in the next year of Jupiter's transit through Gemini. Number one, and this is, first of all, you have to remember that Hermes, the ruler of Gemini, is a trickster. And so the way in which Jupiter, who was called Guru in Indian astrology, will provide us with wisdom, another Jupiterian signification, will be through the double-bodied sort of quicksilver mercurial nature of Gemini, which means that the things that I'm listing here are not necessarily lessons that apply to every phase of life and every person and every situation. They are specific Jupiter in Gemini lessons. So keep that in mind. Every planet and every place has so many different valuable insights to offer us. And they don't need to be in competition with one another for which is more true. The different truths are appropriate for different stages of our evolution and our development. And we're entering a Jupiter and Gemini season, and there's other planets and other signs too. So just keep that in mind. Number one, discernment, not morality. Mercury, as the ruler of this double-bodied air sign, is familiar with both the underworld realm of Hades and the upper world sunny realm of Zeus. Now, Hades and Zeus were brothers, and Hermes can travel fluidly between these two realms. The overworld, I've called it the cosmic suburbs, and the underworld, which is more like the reality of life in the city. You know, it's a complicated place. There's so much more diversity and chaos and kind of intermingling of treacherous opposites, you know, in the underworld. Zeus likes things nicely arranged and orderly and pristine and beautiful, as intelligible as the musical scale. And it's more like Tim Burton in the underworld, you know? So I say all of this because we're trying to make sense of this first idea that it's about discernment, not morality, with Jupiter in Gemini. What that means is that Jupiter in Gemini will have us learn that valuable lesson that every situation requires discernment. Now, let's look at the etymological roots of the word discernment. So here we go. Okay. We're going to go to the word discern. Perceive or recognize the difference or distinction between two or more things. So discern has a connection with the word distinguish. With the eyes, see distinctly, to behold, to perceive and understand, to distinguish and to separate by sifting, to set apart, to distribute. And also the idea of, where is it, to separate things into like different piles. Isn't that an interesting image? It seems perfect to me for Jupiter and Gemini. Now, discernment has this idea of being able to carefully distinguish. And even, I would even use the word judge, though not in like some high executive, just like judging carefully and describing and distinguishing between things. Now, when we think of the word morality, let's go talk about this for a second. Pulling this one up. All right, here we go. When we think of the word morality, we think of a moral instruction or the point of a story, right? Like the moral of a story. And from the Latin, which means the manner or character of something and the sense of there being a good or a bad. a good or a bad. And also, you could associated with or characterized by right behavior. So when you think about morality, you're thinking about categorizing things according to being virtuous or lacking virtue, being good or being bad. And it exists in a sort of pre-agreed upon, well-known, well-recognized code. So, and I don't want to quibble. I mean, you could define morality differently. I think that there's probably more intuitive ways of defining morality. But the point is this, if you just go along with the kind of basic distinction between these two words, to discern means to carefully look at and separate things. And whereas morality is about a little bit more, has that feeling of categorizing things according to a pre-agreed upon set of virtues or values that, when I think of the Ten Commandments, you know, it's an example of a code of morality or something like that. And most of them are pretty good, right? So, but the point of Jupiter in Gemini will be that every situation requires that we not just judge it superficially based upon a preconceived notion of good and bad, but that we look carefully at the details and do some careful discerning. That requires a kind of flexibility of mind, and it requires a flexibility of how we perceive and how we think about things. Now, of course, Jupiter in Gemini, like any Gemini placement, could take this idea and use it for the sake of bending rules or, escaping or evading responsibility through a kind of clever maneuvering or massaging of moral codes or standards, right? So you could see easily how this, like, people would say, oh, let's just stay away from that, you know? Let's just stay away from any of the potential moral ambiguities that could come up around something like this. So it's just like, you know, oops, hold on. Here we go. I've got something beeping here. All right, there we go. So, well, it's just easier to stay away from something like that, right? Like, well, why not just have a clear and easy way of judging things, moral, immoral, good or bad? And the point of Jupiter in Gemini will be to say that life is hardly ever so clear. Now, that's a Jupiter in Gemini teaching. It doesn't mean that life is that there's never just a clear and easy use of moral principles or a clear and easy way in which things are good or bad or dark or light in a moral sense. There is, and we see many examples of that's evil, you know, like at least in an everyday sense, like that's dark, that's some dark shit, you know, but in the human mess of life, Mercury is always asking us to consider the wisdom of places that are more ambiguous or places that require us to look very carefully at the blending of opposites. There's a little good in this situation. There's a little bad. Why does the bad exist? What's the context in which it exists? That shifts and helps us to not judge things in such black or white, in such black or white ways. So the idea is that a Jupiter and Gemini period can help us to become more discerning people and less sort of reactive, puritanical, and sort of morally self-righteous. See, an underlying truth of Jupiter and Gemini is that we're all hypocrites. We're all hypocrites because most of the time we will find that in really important situations in our lives, there's a lot of moral ambiguity. It doesn't mean that, you know, moral ambiguity doesn't mean that we tolerate or allow for, you know, egregious acts of harm or evil or you know what I mean? But it's just like Jupiter and Gemini, it's like you have to make room for the fact that life is full of gray. And if you don't learn how to flow and make careful discerning evaluations of every unique situation, if you only live by very superficial criteria, A, you're not that smart, and B, you're probably a hypocrite, and C, you know, you're going to find that there are going to be situations in which you make a lot of wrong choices, and you're going to learn from those wrong choices because you were too simple in your thinking. You weren't nuanced enough. So anyway, this first lesson that we might be learning gradually, maybe in some big events or maybe in just like small accumulating ways over the next year, that we need discernment, not just black and white ways of judging things when it comes to, you know, ethical or moral just like situations or situations that require some ethical considerations or examination of our values and how we're making choices, stuff like that. All right. Number two, curiosity, not knowing. So what I mean here is the same exact thing. We're just now applying it to the principle of, you could say, epistemology. How do we know something? Well, Jupiter in Gemini is like Socrates, right? The great gadfly walked around Athens asking all of the know-it-alls, you know, questions until it was revealed that they actually didn't know anything. And then people started calling him wisest of all, although he sort of rejects that title wisely. This is Jupiter in Gemini in a sense. There's a value in not being certain of things. There's a value in not knowing what's right in every situation. See, one of the things that agitates me about, and you guys know that I don't really talk about politics on my, or current events much on my channel. And that's a personal choice, obviously. It reflects something about me, but also something about just the kind of, I'm more interested in talking about the personal level of the symbols and how they're applying to our lives in psychological and spiritual ways. And so I don't really go into the current events for that reason. But I will tell you, in all honesty, one of the things that drives me nuts about the public civic discourse of current events, not just politics, but anything, is that I don't see people who are very curious, who are interested, and who hold a position of not knowing. What I see and what frustrates me, or what I just get overwhelmed by, is the immediate sort of knee-jerk reaction to judge and act as though we know why things happen, we know what's best, we know what's right, we know what's wrong. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't situations that are pretty, again, obviously that's wrong or that's bad or whatever. But the level of self-righteousness and knee-jerk certainty, and I know what's right, or I know what's wrong, or I know who you should be, or I know why you didn't do that, or just the hubris intellectually. And also, I will tell you, not that I'm above it, because I find that as soon as I start engaging with it, all of a sudden it comes out in me. These idiots, you know. I'm sure you're like, I don't know if you're like me, but I it triggers me, and then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm part of it. And so I'm very careful. I guard my serenity anyhow. And some of you are much better. I mean, some of you are called to be in these spheres, working, serving. And some people can handle that and stay open and stay curious. But the lesson of Jupiter in Gemini is so much about staying curious, not being the knower, not being the person who understands and has all of the answers, but being someone who is a learner, who is, I'm curious. There are phases in life where the soul cannot grow through any other means but to drop its certainty, to let go of its position of knowing, which is often nothing more than an attempt to bolster, you know, our ego and our sense of power or our sense of security, our stake in a situation. So Jupiter in Gemini really rewards us. Like, there's so many blessings and benefits that come while Jupiter's in Gemini from just being curious, being a learner, being a listener, being discerning, not moralizing, thinking carefully about the presence of opposites, and appreciating the irony that opposites frequently create, and the nuances and comedy, really, that opposites frequently create. So curiosity, not knowing. Let's not be knowers. Let's not be know-it-alls. Let's not be self-righteous. Let's be curious. Let's be learners. Now, that does not mean that there isn't a Jupiter in Sagittarius phase in life where we need to be convicted. We need to be, there are different archetypes, right? Number three, open-mindedness isn't a dogma. This is really kind of a subtle one, but you will find that when Jupiter is in Gemini, being open-minded can be, we're just talking about being open-minded, being curious. But there's also this, I remember this very well when I was in school and different phases and so forth, especially in like school in the 90s where, this is like alternative rock thing was going on. And I remember there being a lot of emphasis on like being open. I'm open-minded, which means I stand for this. As though open-minded is like the baseline. It's the condition that allows for me to be super strict and fanatical and fundamentalist about all of these different things because I'm open-minded, right? So we have to be careful because Jupiter and Gemini will push us sometimes into a space that's really difficult. It's a space that asks us to be open-minded about things that we fundamentally believe should not be included in the space of open-mindedness. That's what can be, I think that's what is most radical and difficult about Jupiter and Gemini. Let's just say, for example, and I'm making this up, right? This is not coming from any experience that I've had, but let's just say that you are, I don't know, you go out to dinner with some people and you are present at the table with someone who you believe is not open-minded, right? And so do you know what I'm talking about? You've probably had this happen before. I can't say that I'm thinking of anything in particular right now, you know, but you're at the dinner table with someone who's not open-minded. The temptation is to think, well, me and my ideas are the open-minded ones, and that person and their ideas are the closed-minded ones. But being open-minded can actually push us in the direction of not judging the situation along those lines. You just remain open-minded. You just say, interesting. I don't have to condone or believe the same things this other person believes, but I also don't have to judge them or put them into a bin of, you know, some kind of category or label. Here's what I have found in my life, being around so many different people and so many different religious and spiritual traditions, especially, is that remaining appreciative and open-minded. I mean, I've been around some people who I've had some very different religious and spiritual views then. Like when I was in the yoga community, the Bhakti yoga world, there were people who were all gradations of strict or whatever. And one of the things that works for me, and I'm a Mars in Gemini, so maybe this is a little bit of my own Gemini energy speaking, is that I've been like, yeah, like that when I hear that, like, ooh, that's too strict, that's closed-minded, that's fundamentalist, or, you know, that's those categories like leap into my mind as a way of labeling someone, you know, or something that's just very different from, you know, myself, is that if I can help it, I'll just stay curious and open-minded. That's interesting. Frequently, what I've experienced in my life when I do that, rather than judging the person, is that that relationship remains open. And then some magic can actually occur within that relationship. I don't have to be best friends with that person. I don't have to align my values with them or condone things that I don't like about what they do or think. But I can just remain, if I remain open-minded, then it is as though there are like little mercurial highways and neural networks and connections that are open, that continue to open. And in that way, you know, things can grow, things can change, things can shift, and things frequently will end up surprising me. I'll be surprised by how that relationship will change over time, even if we're not best friends. So open-mindedness, if you are with people who are closed-minded in some way, but you remain open-minded about them, again, that doesn't mean you have to condone or go along with things that are really extreme or whatever, but if you can just remain open-minded, it's amazing how that open-mindedness will grow. It can actually spread if it needs to, if there's a possibility or a karmic inroad for open-mindedness to spread. It usually happens because you've remained open-minded and not labeled someone else as closed-minded. And this is what I mean when I say that Jupiter and Gemini will teach us to really be open-minded and to not turn open-mindedness into a weapon or a position or a dogma. Number four, opposites means everything is included. Broadly speaking, the message of Hermes, which is the underlying message of the entire system of ancient astrology, by the way, which is hermetic in nature, is that everything in reality is comprised of opposites. And that means absolutely everything that we that is real, that is experienced, is part of it, is part of the whole. Have you ever really sat with that? You know, I every time that I've ever had the occasion to like really be with that, you know, it's not like every day it happens, but of course, over many years with meditation, prayer, psychedelic spiritual experiences, etc., sometimes it really hits you. You go, yeah, the darkness is a part of everything. The light and the dark aren't enemies, they're cooperative, creative principles. And the dark is mysterious by nature. Like you can't see, you know, you don't know, you can't understand. Hermes goes into the invisible darkness of the underworld and comes out again all the time. And so there's this profound opportunity for us to appreciate the existence of opposites, which is how, if we do, that's how and why you want to remain open-minded, curious, discerning, not moralizing. You know, you want to have your positions, but hold them without self-righteousness. Once you understand that the opposites are co-creative principles of God, so to speak, or divinity itself, and that you're a part of it too, and your own oppositions within yourself, psychically, emotionally, your own at times double standards, or your own ambiguities, or your own paradoxes, you know, that they're all a part of what makes you you, and that the same kinds of dualities and opposites are present in making everything exactly what it is. That when we really have moments of realizing that, it's very disarming intellectually. That it takes us from a place of, again, knowing to unknowing, from a kind of faux, open-minded, dogmatic perspective to truly being open-minded, or from knowing to curiosity, and so forth. The opposites mean that everything is included. That doesn't mean you have to understand it. It doesn't mean that you can't still be a morally sensitive citizen with a mission to uphold the good. It just means that everything is included. Number five, more than one thing can be true simultaneously. Jupiter and Gemini also asked us to consider this mind-blowing idea that, as we said to open this, there are different archetypes with different lessons and different truths. In the tapestry of reality, you know, if you want to think about reality like a gigantic tapestry that's built on all of these beautiful patterns that the ancients thought of as existing in the mind of God or the universe. And the patterns themselves were the gods, plural, so that the one becomes many, so that the manifest reality that we are a part of is coming in and through these diverse shapes and forms that are all part of this gigantic tapestry. Every different shape is a different kind of truth. There's the truth of the triangle and the truth of the square. There's the truth of the diameter or opposition, and there's the truth of the sextile, right? And there's the truth of fire and the truth of water, the truth of the feminine and the truth of the masculine, the dark and the light. And these, the more that you understand any one truth, and then simultaneously find it in relation, living relationships to other kinds of archetypal truths, the more that you can start to appreciate the entirety of the tapestry, the more that you can start to appreciate that there are different truths that exist at the same time. And that, in a sense, just like the Taoists said, the work of each individual is to be attuned to which truth is present now and now and now, like that. And to see the shape of every situation and to listen for if there's a moral imperative, that it is as natural, like Immanuel Kant said, the two things that fill me with awe are the starry skies above and the moral law within. That the moral imperative has to do with understanding the unique shape of the moment. And that is a Jupiter and Gemini kind of teaching. More than one thing can be true simultaneously. And to open our minds means to be truly blown away by truth regularly. As soon as we come into possession of truth, we start to lose the capacity for wonder, and we start to lose the capacity to learn new things. And by possession, I mean the gripping or grasping. There's also a way in which we can hold truths while remaining open. How does that happen? How does that move in the soul happen that we can start to hold a truth, but not so tightly that we become unaware of or unavailable to other kinds of truths? So, very interesting and not easy. Like, I know that on the surface, all of us, you listen to this and you're probably going like, yeah, that's me. I want to be open-minded and curious, you know? But wait until it pushes us, you know, wait until it pushes us into a situation where we really don't want to be open to someone or something or an idea. That's when I think it gets really tricky, or we don't think that we can hold a truth while remaining open or flexible or graceful or allowing or tolerant. Okay, well, that's it for today. I hope this was useful for you. If you stick around after I sign off, you'll hear me talk about the upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. Look, if you like this kind of stuff, if you're like, this is my jam, then you should come study ancient astrology, because ancient astrology is all about understanding the underlying philosophy that this is exactly what ancient astrologers were interested in. Jupiter in Gemini. Wow, what kinds of truths do you get when you blend this kind of archetype with that kind of archetype? It is fascinating. And the ancient history of astrology, philosophically, spiritually, and then actually learning the methods and practices of reading charts, it changes your life, whether you want to be a professional astrologer or not. And we have a really good transit, Jupiter in Gemini, trining Pluto in Aquarius as we start the program in June, a very good auspicious transit by means of which to begin a deeper journey with astrology. So check it out. And that is it for today. We'll see you guys again tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends. But if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central, or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planets, signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice they my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place.
what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology being bereft of its ancient textual tradition has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also, in the last portion of the program, inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available, so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early, because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.